So that was the song Papa of the Day, and you are listening to Indra Venus at CGSF 90.1 FM. And today I am joined by a very wonderful volunteer from the ABN network here at SFU. And we have had so many great conversations, and we are just at the halftime. So I'm really hoping to, you know, get deeper into discussions about perhaps consent, and also because it is the SAM month, the Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So if you were to explain to our listeners, what would consent mean? Like, what is the definition?
So one thing that I want to make really clear about consent from the beginning is that no is not the only possible no. There's a lot of things that you should look into when you're, like, not only intimate, but, like, actually in daily life, too. Like, with every action that we have, we need consent from the other participants. There's, like, this activity that, like, is usually used with kids, saying that, oh, if you have, like, a red pen and a blue pen, and some other person has a pink one and you want to use it, you don't go and grab it. You'd ask, hey, can I use this pen? And if they say no, it's okay. Like, they don't want to share it, that's fine. That's not your pen to make a decision on. And I feel like that, like, little activity really encapsulates what consent is really all about, even if it is a kid's activity. Like, it's the best example I can give of what it looks like. But, like, as adults, we can understand that consent is every single verbal expression, every single physical expression that we make when in any situation of life. If a person say yes, but you see that they are like, kind of, like, moving apart or recluding about it, you can understand that that's not a yes. That's not a secure answer. That's not a sure answer of what they're telling you. So, yeah, in every event that we have, we'd like to emphasize that consent is about every kind of relationship, every kind of situation, and every kind of answer that you can get, not only a yes or a no, but everything in between, too.
I think that also reminds me of the... So how do you see boundaries and healthy boundaries and in relationship and consent coming together, and what does it mean to have a healthy boundary? Because it is the example that you gave really illustrates difference between or the similarity between thinking about consent in a day-to-day basis or in a romantic relationship. So yeah, what does boundary look like for you, or what does it mean for you?
Yeah, I feel like boundaries are, like, really important in every relationship. It can be in a romantic relationship, in a friendship, in with family too, like, coming from a culture that, like, families don't really appreciate privacy. I can see that, like, boundaries are important in every single aspect of our life. And I feel like, first of all, we should learn to know ourselves and know what we want, what we don't want, what we feel comfortable with, and also be able to communicate that to others. But also, as a friend, as a partner, or as a family member, we need to understand that not everyone knows how to communicate their boundaries. So also, like, pay attention to the other person's, how they communicate, how they feel. Like, if they didn't say, okay, have this boundary right here, like, you do not cross this. If they don't say it, but you can see that they are uncomfortable, or that they are not being themselves in a situation, in a moment, just feel like, okay, maybe that's the signal that I should not go behind before this point. This is their limit, even if they are not specifically telling me about it. You should really, like, learn to kind of, like, read people's minds in a way, but also know how to ask the right questions too, to communicate, okay, hey, like, I see that you don't feel comfortable with this, like, it's fine if we can stop, or, like, if you want to talk about it, we can talk, like, and if you don't want to talk about it, we don't have to. I know this is a limit from now on. So it's more about, like, knowing yourself and knowing the people around us too.
And I think a follow-up question for me is, like, What do you think are the best practices to set up that boundary or set up that environment of consent and boundaries? I think you mentioned about like having open communication, honesty about where you are at in terms of your relationship and your relationship to your own body and your, you know, all your mental and your cultural existence. So like how would you say, or how, what are the some of the best practices that you think articulate a good form of exercising consent?
Mm-hmm. So I feel like first of all, it's like making sure that the people we are surrounded by is people we can trust. And that's like, again, in every single kind of relationship, you don't own yourself to anyone. You don't own your words or your sympathy to absolutely anyone that you don't want to give it to. And everything that relates to your person, your body, your mental health is your own. So I think that's like really important to know from the beginning. You don't own anything to anyone in any case. And from that, you can see who you feel comfortable communicating with and in which ways. Sometimes maybe like, and I have done this personally with my friends too, where I feel like I cannot really communicate with my words because I'm too like overwhelmed or because I don't find the right words, I will write it down, send a text, write it on your notes, write a letter if you like the handwriting better. Or even be like, oh, like, I seen like this random story on the internet about like this and that. What do you think about it? So like, I feel like there's always a way to communicate your insecurities, your boundaries, and even to start a new conversation, to start a new discussion with someone you want to talk to without saying, oh, I feel this and that, if you don't feel comfortable saying it that way. Mm-hmm. There's always like a second route to get around it.
Yeah, I think it's also really unique to the cultures because I think like Western culture, for example, is more like individual based, mm-hmm. whereas the non-Western world is more like collective based.
Yeah.
So like we are like really engrossed in like having big families, you know, so many siblings, sharing the same study space or, you know. So like I think culturally too, what we understand as boundaries is really different, and I think it's really important that you communicate that with all kinds of relationship of yours, even if that's in terms of, you know, at your workplace, at home, mm-hmm. and with your friends. It's super important, and thanks for bringing that up.
No, thank you for asking about it.
No, it's so important, I think. And also like consent and the videos that we see online about like social media, and like privacy as a thing. Do you think, or what do you think is a good practice about talking about your relationship online and, you know, having that dynamic be presented on a world stage? So how do you see like boundaries maybe coming into play mm-hmm. there?
Yeah, I feel like especially now with all this era of influencers and like new merging activities online, there's a lack of consent in mm-hmm. what people post about other people. There's a lot of cancel culture too, when people just like can say the most outrageous things about anyone just because there's a space. And I feel like in the simple like way, like from the my personal perspective, for example, like if you're with friends and you want to post a picture, what I always do is like, okay, I give them my phone and be like, okay, just like the pictures that like you, I can post, mm-hmm. and then I can see from them, like we can find like a midpoint. Mm-hmm. And I understand that that's more like of a personal, individual like way. It's not like the big wave of influencers and media that we live on. But from our like personal life, we can start from things, like little things like that. Like bring the example from like the little things in life, like, hey, do you like how you look in this picture? Or, hey, can I post this other thing? Or things like that. I also have a friend, like, she has kids. So from the beginning of the pregnancy, she told us, okay, I don't want pictures of my kids online. And, like, if you really want to post something because it was, like, a really good event, like, send me the picture first so I can approve. So, like, having conversations mm-hmm. like that, like, actually sitting down with the people you're around or the people that are going to be in social media with you to have these talks and be like, hey, what can I post? What can I not post? And understand too that their answers can change. It's not like if one day they say yes, you can post pictures of me or of this person, that doesn't mean you can do it every single time. It's just like it's a question that has to be repeatedly answered from them. And there's always, if they say no, you don't have the right to like post it because they say yes in the past. And it's like, and like this idea of consent.
Mm-hmm.
And no, like 5 years doesn't mean that the next no is going to be a maybe. Like if they say like 5 years and then they say no, that's a no still. That doesn't change anything that happened before or after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I also like agree have like and also have the same understanding, because it is so interesting that anybody can like pull up a phone mm-hmm. and like record you doing anything. So like it's really pervasive in ways which we have integrated technology yeah. in our lives. And I really liked your point about like fostering some kind of community of care mm-hmm. and communication where you can clearly talk to your friend and, you know, tell them that this is okay to post or share and this is not. So that is great and that is important yeah. to the listeners as well.
Practice consent in every way of your life.
Yes, yes, absolutely, yes. Also in terms of, I think, thinking about the project that specifically mm-hmm. focuses this year on masculinities, did you see in the survey that consent came up as a thing? Like, what kind of responses or what kind of things are you most excited about mm-hmm. in the project?
So I think that consent didn't came up on the survey, and I don't think it's because people weren't like interested about it. But I feel like the questions were like more targeted to how they feel about like masculinity as a way of living, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like there wasn't really like a place where they could like openly talk about consent within the survey. However, I did see a lot of things regarding vulnerability, open-minded, a sense of community too, like people wanted a more communal sense and fluid sense of masculinity. So I'm really excited to like actually like go through like every one of the answers. We are now having interviews too with some of the people that participated. So like having those conversations are actually really important too on how we move forward with the project and with like AVN in general. I feel like now that we know how people on campus feel and what their insecurities are and what they want masculinity to be in the future, we can really like target, like for example, we're talking about social media. We have our Instagram account with the AVN. So maybe posting more about like healthy masculinity or like ways in which you can be vulnerable while being masculine. Like that's not something that is negates the other. So I think that now that we know how people feel, we can really target or social media posts, or events, and our way of living life as individuals too in a different way, being more mindful of what people want to see, what people are not seeing online maybe, if they grew up in a more conservative culture and they didn't grow up like seeing healthy masculinities online, maybe we can be that healthy masculinity impact that they need in their life right now.
Mm-hmm. And also like in terms of getting responses, I'm sure you like have like a very great team of people who are working together about thinking about these questions to ask on a survey, because creating a survey in itself is such a huge task, because you have to think about questions that are not confusing, that are clear, and really address the main question that you want to ask. So yeah, I'm really excited and happy to see that such a survey was done at our university, and I'm really looking forward to seeing your guys' social media, Instagram especially, to see at what cute posts, because you guys really post like cute infographics and all those things. So I'm really excited to see that. But I just realized it might be helpful for our listeners also mm-hmm. to talk about what is the active bystander effect, and like what is the problems that usually, you know, have to deal with on a daily basis when we are traveling in a SkyTrain or in a yeah. bus, like yeah
so that's this idea of the bystander effect that we always think that someone else is going to do something about what's going on. And it's as easy as, like, when you're sitting on the bus and, like, someone that needs a seat comes into the bus, and you're like, oh, someone else is going to stand up. Like, it doesn't have to be me. Like, someone else is sure going to stand up. So we stay in that comfortable area that we don't need to act in order for things to change. And then I think that's really harmful, especially with, like, sexual assault and sexual violence and, like, gender-based violence, too. We always expect someone else to do something and help the person in need. We never want to be the one acting. And it's completely understandable that maybe you don't want to put yourself at risk. Maybe you don't know, you don't have the right tools to do something about it. So there's, like, different steps that maybe you can, like, use. Every time we talk in our events about different D's of active bystander, so it can be distract, delegate. I forgot the other two D's, but I can explain them to you because I know the definition, but know the D right now. So distract first. If you see a situation that you don't really know how to act upon, there's this video, there's this really famous video about this guy. They say walking down the street and there are, like, two people fighting, and he just stands in the middle of them and starts eating chips. It's like, really, he doesn't, like, intervene in the in any way. It's like, and these people, like, get uncomfortable because there's, like, a random dude standing in between their fight, just eating chips, minding his own business, and they stop. So that's, like, a really good idea of what distracting means. Just, like, do something that will cut the attention and just, like, distract them from the situation and they can go their separate ways. There's also to delegate. So if you see something on the schedule, for example, there's always the numbers for the police or emergency contacts in the bus, on the schedule, every, like, public transit. And also if you have in your phone, like, the police number, you can always call someone else and talk about the situation with them. Or even if you see someone around you that might look more comfortable with the situation that you are, just be like in the case of the bus, I go to the bus driver and be like, hey, this is happening back there, like, what can we do about it? I remember the other D, that's direct. But it's like, you can directly go to a situation and do something about it. You can be either talk to the victim or the person that's been aggressive to and be like, hey, like, calm down, this is not the place, like, I'm gonna call the police. Or also, what I like to do in Paris, especially because Paris are not a safe space for anyone lately, if you see that someone is, like, maybe too drunk or, like, they're not acting themselves or they look scared or, like, insecure about a situation and you see that they might be in danger, just go to them and be like, hey, do you know what the washroom is? Or, like, hey, like, I've been looking for you, like, where are the other friends, blah, blah. And just, like, interact as if you know each other. And that usually, not always, but it's a way to, like, get the tension out of them. And the other person might feel like, okay, wait, no, they're with people here. Like, we can't do anything. Like, let's just leave. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, many ways in which you can, like, act as an active bystander, mm-hmm. and not fall into that bystander trap that is, like, oh, anyone, like, someone else would, like, do something mm-hmm. about it. Mm-hmm. You can be that person doing something about it in any case, and don't wait for anyone else to, like, act on your mm-hmm. behalf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this will be, like, our last main block of question, and then we can promote all the things that comes from the ABN and the SVSPO. But before that, and before our last song as well, one question that came up in my mind was also about how do you think being a minority or being a person of color or your identity, for example, also plays into this topic, this mm-hmm. issue that we're talking about today, and some of the problems that come with creating the quote-unquote victim narrative. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if we can just, like, you know, talk about it. I know we don't have much time, but, you know.
No, that's fine. Yes, I feel like minorities have, like, really precarious experience towards safety and justice in everywhere, not only here in Canada, but, like, everywhere in the world. there's like different minorities that experience these things. So I think there's a lot of maybe not understanding what they are trying to communicate, or like deeming them dramatic, or oh, you're just saying this because you want attention, or because you want certain benefits that you will get if this happens to you just because you're a minority. And there's a lot of stereotypes attached to what a person looks like, or how they talk, their accents, where they come from, their backgrounds. Even if they are like fifth generation in Canada, there's like still a lot of skepticism from the justice system and also society as a whole that comes linked with that. And I feel like in this sense of, not like justice, but also like we were talking about social media, when people come forward in social media being like, oh, this happened to me, or like, this is my story, or like, I want to share like it in here because I know no one else will listen, or I know there's not going to be justice because of who I am. That also says a lot too about the city we live in, that people, I feel so afraid that they are not going to be heard, that they're not going to be understood, and they have to just do it by their own, like just leave their future and their security to like social media and their followers to like do something about it. And even when they like expose themselves to things like that, the comments can be like, oh, they are doing this because they are from this minority and they will like benefit, so like they are just pretending to like get more followers. Like, I feel you can never make people happy, like, especially if you're from a minority, they will always find a way to like target you in a way. Mm-hmm. And I feel it's really important that more minorities start to like be visible, like in mm-hmm. every sense, like at schools, like with professors, with professionals, with social media. Mm-hmm. We just need to have like a more clear understanding of who we live with, and that mm-hmm. this place should be open for like everyone and not like certain groups of people.
That is true. And I also think there are some kinds of vulnerabilities or issues that also come up with the intersection of gender mm-hmm. and identity and your sexual orientation, because when those things come together, more often than not, issues exacerbate. So yeah. I think, yeah, that's also an important thing to keep in mind. We are almost overdue for our last song. So if yeah. you want to introduce that.
Yes, yeah, so our last song is one of my favorites, actually, and it's Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day. So we wanted to add this song into this conversation of masculinity because I think that it expresses a lot about mental health and how society usually pushes masculinity to be related to toughness and like the absence of affection. It generates a lack of opportunities to share one's feeling and creates a sense of like loneliness and lack of control over one's feelings and mental health. See, I really enjoy this song and I hope like everyone else does too and finds meaning into these lyrics.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's only me and I walk alone. I walk this empty empty street on the boulevard of broken dreams, where the city sleeps and I'm the only one.
We are almost at time, and I just wanted to take the last 30 seconds and give you the floor to talk more about the SAM things happening in 2024 at SFU and more so on the SVSPO. So I will link all the things on the Intravenous's page.
So yeah, we have the conversation on the 24th, but we can also invite everyone on campus to participate at SAM. So there will be workshops happening until the 31st of January. And you can find this information in www.sfu.ca/SAM. So it's S-A-A-M. And there will also be more information in the SVSPO Instagram and Facebook account. And that's at sfu.svspo on both Instagram and Facebook. So yeah, that's pretty much what we have right now. There will be an event on the 21st too at the Burnaby campus, and there will be a virtual the virtual community too happening on the 24th. And I will also want to share, if that's fine with you, some of the services that we offer at the SVSPO. So the office provides free confidential support and resources to all SFU and FIC community members. So that would be students, staff, and faculty who have been impacted by sexual violence. And again, by impacted by sexual violence, we're not only talking about victims, but everyone around their circle. So if you have a friend that has been impacted by sexual violence or gender-based violence, you can always reach out to us if you need to talk more about it, if you want more information, or if you want the right tools to help them out. And we can also follow the AVN account on Instagram, and that's at Active Bystanders SFU.
That's amazing. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us and having this important conversation.